Well, our guest poet tonight is Khaled Matawa. He is the author of a book of poems, which is available on our book table, called Ismailia Eclipse, that was published by the Sheep Meadow Press in 1995. He's also the translator of two books of Arabic poetry, Hatif Janabi's Questions and Their Retinue, which University of Arkansas Press came out with in 1996, and his translation of Fadil al-Azawi's In Every Well a Joseph is Weeping was published as a volume in the Quarterly Review of Literature in 1997. Recently, he was awarded a Guggenheim Fellowship and an NEA translation grant. His poems and essays have appeared in numerous journals and anthologies. He grew up in Libya, emigrating to the United States at the age of 15 as one of the editors he's worked with, Stanley Moss, observed, his life and poetry are inseparably rooted in both Arab and U.S. cultures. His poetry characterized by a double vision of the Arab and American worlds, eclipsing and revealing one another. Yusuf Kaminyaka, who's read here at Duff's, wrote of his poetry, "The reader is taken on a journey that challenges and humanizes." He currently teaches at Denison University in Ohio, and this is his first reading in St. Louis, so please give him a warm welcome. Khaled Matawa.
Thank you for coming. It's a really wonderful place. Okay, yes, I'm kind of loud, so I'll try that. Thank you. Like Jason, I'm trying to will a book into existence. So what I will do is read two longish poems from Ismailia Eclipse, and then I shall give you my new information. Okay. This is called Watermelon Tales. It's kind of a cinematically arranged poem, if you will. January, snow. For days I have craved watermelons, wanted to freckle the ground with seeds, to perform a ritual. Noontime, an early summer Sunday, the village chief faces north, spits seven mouthfuls, fingers a circle around a galaxy of seeds. Maimoon, the Bedouin, visited in summer, always with a gift, a pickup truck load of watermelons. Something for the children, he explained. Neighbors brought wheelbarrows to fetch their share. Our chickens ate the rest. His right ear pricked up close. My father taps on a watermelon, strokes as though it were a thigh, a light slap. If this melon doesn't sound like your hands clapping at a wedding, it's not yours. Men shake the chief's hand. Children kiss it. Everyone files behind him when he walks back. No one talks until the tomb of the local saint. The rich place coin sacks at his feet. The poor leave cups of melon seeds. Maimoon also brought us meat. Gazelles he rammed with his truck. His daughter Salima said he once swerved off the road. Suddenly drove for an hour until he spotted six gazelles. He hadn't hit any when the truck ran out of gas. 30 yards away, the gazelle stood panting, and he ran to catch one with bare hands. two choices, my father's doctor tells us. Transplant or 6 months of pain. Outside the clinic, I point to a food stall, the seller waving off flies with a feather fan. My father strokes, slaps, and when I lift the melon to my shoulder, says, 11 years in America, and you still carry a watermelon like a peasant. Uncle Abdullah buries a watermelon underneath the approach of the waves, like a refrigerator down there. It's July, a picnic at Tokara Beach. We're kicking a ball when my brother trips hard on the mound. He's told to eat what he'd broken too soon. I watched him swallow pop, seed, salt, and sand. Her shadow twice her height, the village sorceress walks to where the chief spat. She reveals the size of the harvest, chance of drought, whose sons will wed whose daughters, and the names of elders whose names, whose ailments will not cease. Salima told the gazelle story sitting in a tub. With soap, my mother scrubbed the girl's scalp, tossing handfuls of foam against the white tile. She then poured kerosene on Salima's hair, rubbed till lice slid down her face, combed till the tines filled with the dead. Salima married. My mother sent her a silver anklet, a green silk shawl, and decided against the ivory comb. My father paid the imam to perform the wedding. A week later, at his door, the sheikh found 3 watermelons and a gazelle skin prayer rug, a tire mark across the spot where he would have rested his head in prostration. I cut the melon we bought into cubes, strawberry red, but they were dry, almost bitter. After the third taste, my father dropped his fork. He gazed at the window for a while and spent the rest of his day in bed. I used to sometimes read it, spent the rest of his days in bed, which I thought was kind of a Freudian slip. Yes. This poem is called 50 April Years. And April, of course, as Eliot said, is the coolest month. But I was thinking about, I remember listening to the radio one time, and I was thinking that there was a story about the 50th anniversary of the storming of the Warsaw Ghetto. And there was also a story about a Sarajevo, this was during the war in Sarajevo, where some sort of ceasefire was declared during the end of Ramadan. But then there was a celebration going on, and these kids were playing soccer, and a bomb was thrown over them, and they were killed. And I remember April from Libya, which is sort of one of these crucial months where the government sort of decided to purge, and it chose April as the month of purging. And so in many ways, this weaves these things together. I hope I haven't given the poem away. I feel I may have. So it's 50 April years. A soldier waved our bus into a detour. We didn't pass by Parliament Square that day. I'd hoped to go to a pastry shop, coins I saved for a week, southern winds, sun shrouded in dirty clouds, red tongues of dust on window panes. There had been a hanging on the square. 16 years later, I eat lunch at home. Afternoon light, the gloss of olive oil on lettuce leaves. On the radio, whistle and boom of mortar shells, one landing on a soccer field, 40 boys dead. And I'm trying to remember who wrote, to die in mid-sentence was to triumph over the dark. When I was 7, I spent days hiding among the beanstalks. I heard my name called and felt indifferent to being wanted, unassured that the world I lived in would undo my foolish malcontent. It's not as dramatic now. I look out the window, people in their rooms reading or thinking or watching TV, as if the world had stopped calling, as if we had emerged from the whirlpool of its demands with a wild mixture of cowardice and courage to say unto others, I wish you did not exist. On the day of the hanging, my father drove home, a poster of the president on the hood of his car. He tried to explain. Over and over, he said, survive. Once, I believed forgetfulness was a gift from the gods, not an erosion of the soul. Now I know enough to say that this has happened before, and even crueler things, the bombardment of the ghetto as the Republic ate its lunch in the park, held its toddlers, napped on lawns, smoke, sharp air, fevered with the hiss of a flute. Don't ask. I too find myself listening to those who abhor coherence, who tell us language is a bucket of slop, and we can only grunt and squeal. I wonder if they say this to silence the wretched who have found no words, who wave their torn limbs at us. This too has happened before. My brother and I snuck into the car the night of the hangings. We wanted to tear the president's poster, but something held us, not a policeman's shadow, nor the neighborhood spy, not even my father, who hours before had gone to sleep. Thank you. Thank you. I may announce this book. It's an anthology of new Arab American writing that I had the pleasure of co-editing with a gentleman named Munir Akash. I hope you look for it when you have chance. It's called Post Gibran. we wanted to actually call it Post Post, but. It was too ironic that way. too much. Okay. I want to read now. This will be a postscript. See, I am willing the book into existence. This will be a postscript of this manuscript I'm putting together. But I'm reading it now because I figure you won't have the reading experience. And this is a quote from a medieval astrologer. You know, a while back it didn't really make, people really didn't fuss about that whole thing. So this is the quote. The zodiac of echoes consists of five stars that rotate around a speckled sun. One star, heart sickness, distinguished by its crimson color with rosy swirls, informs on the seeker state of love. Another, a greenish planet with variations of gray and yellow hues, is consulted on issues of bloodlines and potency. It is called Light of Lineage. The third star, the Scroll of the Soul, is a solid blue star which appears in differing sizes depending on the questioner's condition. Its function, as the name implies, is to inform on the state of the soul. The fourth, a citrus-colored, fire-colored star is consulted on many matters that range from material well-being, the potential of war, and on future weather conditions such as flood and drought. It is called the Book of Things. And finally, a bright, small, white star, clear as milk or the petals of a daisy, is consulted in the interpretation of dreams or prophecies one acquaints and does not understand. When the thrust of the misunderstood phrases is good, the star shines in the aforementioned brightness. If the words are ominous and foreboding, the star appears with a yellow halo running along its edges. Called the Song of Meaning, this star never appears alone. like a child hanging to its mother's skirt, it always attaches itself to one of the big stars. As to the speckled sun, named the labyrinth of yearnings, it has been postulated concurrent to our belief that the speckles on the sun are prayers, human and otherwise, unable to proceed higher into the heavens. These prayers become attached to the sun, which attracts them like a magnet. Since the whole zodiac is in constant motion, and as this sun constantly spins about its orbit, some prayers become detached, unable to resume their original ascent to the highest tiers. The prayers spin about the zodiac, filling it with their echoes. It is the mingled sounds of these unanswerable prayers that gives this zodiac its name. So, Zodiac of Echoes, and this is the name of the manuscript. And that probably will be the last. No, there is another astronomical reference, but that's it. So, don't consult your NASA handbook or anything afterwards. Cricket Mountain. The bridge under our wheels moaned, some said because it was built in a time of war. Others were more specific. It moaned because of the two men buried in the concrete. General Rommel built it. The British maintained the asphalt after he was driven away. My father drives across it with the car lights off. The haze from the city is enough to show the way, he explains. Then we stop by a channel that carried sea water to the salt fields. There are no birds, not even the sudden flop of a fish or the rumble of the city's thousand pariahs that roam the streets and howl through the night. The sound of the crickets caws like a creature wanting to let itself be known, yet is quick to withdraw. My father rests his hand on my shoulder to quiet me. Then soon there is nothing in the world but the cricket's hum, an ordered machinery, a vibrating zone. You feel the air shiver around you, the sound wrapping you like a shroud. If you close your eyes, you can almost see the mass of their history, the infinity of their future births and deaths, the design of their invention, and the idea of their purpose. Then this heap of intangibles rises like a mountain of silver, glittering, luminous, doing away with the dark. Who was I then? And who was my father? And what was that city that tangled us in its muddy streets? This is Genealogy of Fire. The first part is true. It's really true. I'm serious about that. And I remembered it. All of a sudden, I said, wow, I was exposed to evolution even before I knew it. Yes. My sister held an old piece of bread. She pointed to the fungus growing on it and told my mother, this is how we began. My mother was a planet in search of an explanation, and my sister an idea hoping to plant itself in the dirt. As you can imagine, they didn't get along too well. So, if I were to say, take these embers and carry them in your hands, use a rag for help, would you? Let's not hypothesize and ask for feats that happen without volition. An astrologer in Arabic is a falaki. He or she watches stars swim in the falak, and falak is the word for star, for orbit, for sky. So my sister worries about her children. She spanks them, but hates to hear them criticized. They are orbit, stars, heavens, and if that is motherhood, and because a woman gets into her white car, and the world is full of white cars, and they always disappear like comets on unfathomable orbits. Birth must be a machine that braids chance and desire, a marriage of branch and bird call, a wave on whose fluctuations street sounds and mysteries float. I was born in a hot country, hot most of the time, dusty. The water tasted of salt, and the sun turned our skins into the color of fading bruises. In the winter, the rooms were cold, and we slept under many blankets and huddled when we were awake and blew breath into our hands when teachers hit us with their bamboo sticks. My sister's daughter tosses her book aside, a budding galaxy, a swirl of centuries of ecstasies and torment. She no longer wants to be the next Simone Veil. I shall put on flesh, she declares, the refrigerator's handle in her grasp. When my mother is alone in a room, she begins rocking. When she does not know the answer to a question, she rocks three times. When she falls asleep, she curses those who make more than breathing sounds. Night is long in her night, the day a sickle, the moon high, high, and rain eventually destroys a man's house who has nothing but a cat that meows. My sister's school was named after a holy woman, the first wife of the prophet. The classrooms were the prophet's tears. Weep with me now that I have children who have grown thin and tall like irises, like corn stalks. Winds will blow at them and the world will choke them. Varicose veins and late night laundry. Sadness happily rendered penetrates their music. An unarmed robber, a potter careful about keeping the oven clean. Sisterhood, daughterhood, and the myriad arabesques of water. She saved her wage money, all of it, and bought herself some land. And if she were, and if they were, to wake in the swamps of night, the air cool and smooth and satin, every dust mote a little moon, and if she were, and if they were, to disappear like fog at sunrise, or on crowded roads or dead gardens, and if her voice, and if their voices, were to be swallowed by sounds of forest or shifting dunes, how will I ever be consoled? Thank you. On Apples and Shepherds, the first stanza explains the connection. Apples and Shepherds, kind of biblical, but there's a TV there and satellite dishes eventually, so it won't stay biblical for long. On Apples and Shepherds. A shepherd herding his father's flock, 20 when he tasted apples for the first time. He bit into a hint of cedar, brittle mountain air, spring water and fibrous flesh, colored sunlight, green vessels, lining wood and speckled red skin, the climate of another country streaming between his teeth. To live in London then, years later, to speak the English of Mallarmé, to for the two, which the where, to walk through a haze of language, senses gloved and time surrendering to the present tense. But oh, the air and its latitudes, pockets the mind can slip into. Oh, to have smelled so many things, an apple in the coarse hands of a shepherd, a house by a channel where a buffalo carcass stinks up the world. You open a door and the air is a cloud of frankincense. You stand at a traffic light and a bus blows its black flag. Tripoli, circa 1968, you cough and faint, and years before, in a warehouse, a jug of acid breaks open, and you smell your arms burn. Henna on your wife's hands. Cigarette smoke from your daughter's room. You tell her you'll break her fingers. Beer on your son's breath. You say nothing because fire in your pension. And this morning, you walk to your car. February air, you breathe out in clouds, spruce, the evergreen, the green of evergreen. Satellites feed you 100 channels. You flick through 1,000 kissing scenes and the hours that eat into your waiting for life to do what? The children, the work, the air that keeps you running past the reach of your lungs. Drift now, drift again, to the day you lost a son to August. You smelled words, some solicitous, some enigmatic, pure air. The boy lay dead on the street. The runaway driver never found the smell of your loss, metallic. The smell of rage, wet, dead leaves. Lord of shepherds. Lord of jasmine and airplanes, excrement and drive-throughs, Lord of tarmac and the frenzied passing of time, Lord of basil and wild sage, apples and diesel fumes, and whatever splits the soul like a pod. Forgotten days, out now, bats at the break of day. We are pages miles away from the river, the bean field, the cracked heels, years away from the book. I look at a map, the city where I live, a desk, a salary, a phone, a lover on the other side of the continent. I run to her, a diver coming up for air. There is no end to this. There is no end to this either. Somewhere within your vision, animals graze. You pull at a shoot and chew at a thought. It feels you've never gotten up from here. You light a lamp in a house at the edge of a field, a hint of frankincense, always facing the same mystery. The meal you sit to alone, the life you swiftly cut up and eat. Thank you. Thanks. That was On Apples and Shepherds. Yes. This next poem is called The Road from Biloxi. My American journey sort of began from Mississippi. It's almost like entering, if the country were an animal, it's almost like entering I'm not going to say, but you know what it is. And it's one of its main holes. So that's where my first stay stayed in Mississippi. The thing is, it gives you a perspective. Really, it really does. The country just gets better and better. So, and I must say, it's very strange how I stayed in the South for like 9 years. I don't understand it, but just somehow you just get attached to some kind of scenery. And I went to LA where there were the palm trees of my youth, the weather, and I just said, no, this is, I want like leaves and color and humidity. So I'm in it. So this is called The Road from Biloxi. Qadir blew at a cigarette, stuck his head out the window. Carol wondered why she left, was beginning to see living in peace with Sandinistas in her father's ranch. My brother and I, up front, wondered why we hadn't killed each other all these years. We were stuck on the Biloxi Highway, mid-July, the AC kaput, and what the radio played didn't matter. Randy Travis on the rise, declaring the end of whatever, disco. Reagan, Mies, Jane Fonda, and the gain in the pain, and we all felt like burning American flags for on behalf of 1,000 justifiable causes. But who cares? We were stuck for hours, stuck in 1982, and what blocked the way didn't matter, and the ocean we went to see was no big deal. A great disappointment, in fact, an ocean brow beaten by a river, rumbling, moaning, black-eyed, bruised, weighed by Mississippi silt, and the salty air we came to breathe did not appear, only swamp algae and the death smell of moss, the slime, the invisible webs that trapped ghost in lukewarm water, the dead who would not dissolve. Tom Sawyer not dissolving, Huck Finn not dissolving, Big Jim not dissolving, Goodman, Cheney, Medgar not dissolving, Cherokee tears floating on top like drops of oil, Lakota still streaming down, Kiowa still coming down, Sioux still floating, still on in the Mississippi, where everything seemed tenuous, everything seemed it would revert back to the dreams of sickly men and women, back to the nightmares of renegades and domestics, all hanging there in the air over Biloxi, clinging to crayfish and the gnarled hands of shrimpers. It's right there, ominous, a poisonous lethargy, not far from the town we lived in, which, God knows, didn't matter, making tomorrow matter even less, as long as we were here, the week after and the month. Next time, we promise, it'll be the Atlantic. Next time, some salty immensity, some honest-to-goodness breeze, the smell of the earth turning around itself, a clear run to the horizon, a clean shot to Africa, something we could beckon and understand, something the waves would release us from now that we were stuck here on the Biloxi Road, chained and chain-smoking, aware of the sea we left behind and that had left us, the Mediterranean, too far to touch us again, too far to ever matter. Thank you. This next poem takes its title from one of the most important poems in Arabic poetry, and it's called Rain Song. The poem is by Bedr Shaker Al-Sayyab, who really sort of modernized Arabic poetry, new language, if you will, much more passionate intensity, and much more political, social commitment, and gaps in the modernist sense. Al-Sayyab was influenced by Eliot, and also much more by Edith Sitwell, whom people don't really read much these days. So it's Rain Song. I can't say more than that. It incorporates some of the language that Sayyab has in his poem, and I just sort of get into it, if you will. Rain and the radio blares, Dialogue of Souls. Dialogue of Souls, it was a program on the radio that I used to hear when I was growing up. And it used to rock my soul every morning, regularly on the way to school. Rain and the radio blares, Dialogue of Souls. And the woman who hated clouds watches the sky. Where is the sea now, she asks. Where is it from here? What is its name, this rain on a morning ride to school? The winter of my seventh year, my father driving through rain, his eyes fixed on a world of credit and debt on the radio, devotion to the lifter of harm from those who despair, knower of secrets with the knowledge of certainty, not even the anguish of those years, the heavy traffic, cold and wind, could have touched me. I was certain the palm holding me would be struck again. Chance allows for that and for stars to throb in unreachable depth, filled with a grief bordering on happiness. It didn't matter if I was safe, whether the storm was over, only that it came, the slash of lightning, the groaning sky, and the storms we made, how rain stripped everything of urgency, how to the lifter of harm rise those who despair. We have returned to your shade. We have turned to you for rain, and a king leads his nation in prayer. Thousands stand behind him. When he bows on a silk carpet, his subjects follow. Their words are gutters that moan in the rain. Behind them, the sea flops its belly, the sea stroked by the hand of nightfall, where a sobbing flares and wind. It's coming now to make the ground speak in whispers of mist, moonbeams on a riverbed, lightning, tense lines on an angry brow, and the self is lost. as if in Nebraska, driving through flash flood storms, Omaha, Lincoln, and kingdoms of corn and wheat, smitten by the field mice's helplessness, the silence of birds on trees, darkness rushes in, its black ambulance shepherding dread. I pray because there is no shelter from floating on a sea of distances, forgetting that I was raised where rain meant fire, children fussed over, and the songs they sang were the oars that broke the first shadows of dawn, forgetting how the engines that spluttered across the bay sifted through the water's dreams, shredding seaweed, erasing my city's blood-stained slates. Go now, measure the solitude of a man walking in the rain. Comfort the woman who hated clouds as she looks out her window, her chest a sponge rain soaked with despair. Beckon the sea, buried in light, to rise and listen to prayers brushed with silk, prayers of parched lips and the creaking ruts, the whistling pipes, gullies and ravines broken boned where the chant of a thousand wailers blares. Go now, pouring rain. Bless my friends walking through a storm. A ritual follows towels, a pinch of salt and swigs of rum. They remember their island home. Bliss to them is the sound of rain, its lascivious dancing, its steel-hulled pulse, its sugar-stained bacchanal. And the homeless woman who storms into a store in Indiana, no one is startled by her stagger or the wisps of hair that line her forehead, as if all is forgiven for now. In the rain and the Mississippi sun for hours on end, an iron press turning roads into mush and the lingering liquor scent of tar, afternoon clouds toss half-dollar drops of rain on windshields, skirts of steam swirl and veil storefronts and trees. Bless me now, pouring rain, as the world I know leaves me. The swords that pierce the sky unsheathed and clanking, thongs of mud across the road, and as the city opens its eyelids of rain, its vision of dull embers fixed on me.
Thank you.
Well, we're really getting along. You tired? Want some coffee? Alright. I have a few poems, again, from the same sort of postscript that I read. The word echo and the word elixir. I'm addicted to English words that begin with vowels, you know, Ismailia, eclipse, echo, and elixir. These words are sort of like have a, almost like an utterance of doubt before even they begin. It's almost like you're stuttering before you even say them. Echo and elixir. It shines through clouds and rain. It dyes the streets with its pink blossoms. The day crawls through its tunnels. The roads are long and long, city without words, night without night. Somewhere I remember, these clothes are not my clothes. These bones are not my bones. I forget and remember again. Ships in the harbor, which is the sea, which is the journey that awakens a light inside my chest. Look at the hands turning the knobs, the hands that haul the machine, the man on the phone calling, hanging up, calling again, dust and twisted nails, pebbles and pieces of broken china, and all the sweeping that goes on in the world. No help, no use saying I will wait. It flowers into decades of May. It shines the windows with your passing gaze. Cigarettes in the bar, a beer. The odyssey ends with a boarding pass. In the duty-free shops, does one buy perfume or Tunisian dates? People don't ask how long you've been away. But what have you brought? And being away is all you bring. Trepidation fills your shoulder bag, and the ache writes a book of coffee grinds on your mother's bread. I've been reading Plato, trying to find a word. Dirt reddens and browns, yellows and grays. Abdul Hamid the scribe, Baris Fano, Abdurrahman Falcon of Quraysh, Gilgamesh still on his boat, waiting to land on beaches full of people who wait. In your absence, there's no avoiding legend. Yet you are still a child. Sappho and Hansa taught you that, and the life in the hands you shake, the poetry in the sand, more than the poetry in poetry. I am a spirit and a body. The trees speak a language of light and thorns. Let me tell you a story now. You see a city in the clouds and give it a woman's name. Always a woman's name. Let me tell you about my loved one's hair. You take a blade of grass, and for a second, you are a citizen of its taste. Cairo's taxi drivers speak to me in English. I answer, and they say your Arabic is good. How long have you been with us? All my life, I tell them, but I'm never believed. They speak to me in Farsi, they speak to me in Greek, so I tell them mountains of gold and silver, ghost ships sailing the Sargasso Sea, and when they speak to me in Spanish, I say Moriscos and Alhambra, I say Jews rescued by Ottoman boats, and they speak to me in Portuguese. All my life, I tell them Kofo, coffee, cocoa, Indians and poison spears. I say Afonso, king of Bikongo, writing Manuel to free his enslaved sons, and Cairo's taxi drivers tell me your Arabic is surprisingly good. Then they speak to me in Italian, and I tell them how I lay swaddled a month walk from here. I tell them camps in the desert, barbed wire, wives and daughters dying, camels frothing disease, the sand stretching like an endless pool, and they say so good, so good. How long have you been with us? All my life, but I'm never believed. Then they speak to me in French, and I say, Jamila, Leopold, and Stanley. I say, baskets of severed hands and feet. I say, the horror, battles of Algiers. And they speak to me in English, and I say, Lucknow, Arbenz. I say, Indigo, Hiroshima, continent soaked in tea. I play them the drum beat of stamps. I invoke Mrs. Cummings, U.S. consul in Athens. I say, Ishi, Custer, wounded knee. And Cairo's taxi drivers tell me, your Arabic is unbelievably good. I tell them my first name is Little Lion, my last name is Broken Branch. I sing them, oh happiness uncontainable, oh fields greening in marsh, until I'm sad and tired and drunk with the truth, and as usual, I am never believed. Then they lead me through World Bank congestion, gritty air and narrow streets crowded with Coca-Cola and the sucking faces of the poor. And when we arrive, Cairo's taxi drivers and I speak in all the languages of the world except our own, and we argue and we argue about alternate routes, the corruption, the exorbitant fares. Thank you. You know, I have more than I had hoped. Okay, you're going to have to stay.
This poem.
I have only one joke about this poem, and I keep saying it, and if you've ever heard me before, you will hear the same joke again. But sometimes when you write a poem, you really want to cause a particular feeling. And, you know, sometimes you want to make people happy, you want to make them sad, you want to make them feel your sadness, you want to make them feel your drudgery or whatever. And here I wanted to write a poem that, from causing curiosity, about two-thirds down the poem, I wanted to cause a really sort of deep sense of discomfort in the reader, a real sort of desire for me to stop reading. And if that doesn't happen, please let me know. I'd like to help you. maybe I can recommend some drugs. She was our neighbor, the diabetic woman who kept having children. Please send us new photos, they said. Two cousins went to jail and one died under torture. Rafa goes to Alexandria once a year to remember his joyful youth. His friend was being beaten by a gang, and to defend him, your nephew stabbed one of them in the shoulder. Her third child's right arm ended at the elbow. The old house is now empty, not sure whether to sell it or tear it down. Your brother has an ulcer and burps all day long. Don't worry about grammar, just send us letters. Father came back from London in excellent health, looked like a bridegroom. Her second child was born without a left hand. Your poor sister is balding, too many male hormones. Her first one had a finger missing. His wife now says, how come no one told me about this? And everyone goes, hey, hey, hey. And the fourth had two fingers protruding out of his left shoulder. No arms, don't you remember? She was our neighbor, the diabetic woman who kept having children. His friend was being beaten by a gang, and your nephew stabbed one of them in the shoulder. Please send us new photos. Father came back from London in excellent health. Her second child was born without a left hand. The third's right arm ended at the elbow, and the fourth had two fingers protruding out of his left shoulder. No arm. Your brother has an ulcer and burps all day long. His wife now says, how come no one told me about this? And everyone laughs and laughs. Your poor sister is balding, too many male hormones. Her first one had a finger missing. Two cousins went to jail and one died under torture. Don't worry about grammar. Just send the damn letters. Rafa goes to Alexandria to relive his joyful youth. You couldn't have forgotten her. She was our neighbor, the diabetic woman who kept having children. It is not the land or the people. Somewhere with you in San Francisco, the smell of the forest sent me away. I touched an afternoon that never happened. The stories you believe are the stories you make. So one enters a room, alone, people there, and they see the dust, and they hear the echo of travel. They remember distances and songs, and they read a script that befuddles the page. Trains and airports, short-term leases and hotel rooms, hawkers and dingy bars. They see windstorms and sandstorms, ghost towns and customs shacks. But that is not why I keep thinking one life is not enough, or that I've lived enough. It is not the reason why I think the present is a blockade on the intersection of the future and the past. It is not the reason why my boredom is resourceful, why it finds me wherever I go, or why I feel that somewhere else, in the infinite bend below the horizon, better things are happening, events and lives that pertain to me. It is not why I love you and love you again and leave us both aghast. Maybe love is a walk to astonishment, or a ship stranded on the shore of oblivion, the infinity in the atom, the treasures found in a word from long ago, now retrieved in the mind's chamber, so luminous it sees nothing but you. Soul of my heart, and my eyes lanterns, my loved one's hairs tangled like a tumbleweed, soft as down, my gazelle and the music in her walk, my freckled wonder, my apricot. Maybe these are the heart symbols that guide its trans, rohi, gharami, ishqi, ahla ayami. Maybe to say I love you in another language is not to love you at all. Hear me say it, habibti. I say, nhibbik. Okay, two more poems. We've slid into love without even intending it. That's the way it happens. Two more poems. A recent poem, but I think it's a keeper. A way out. After many stamps and stops, beyond flags, passports, philosophies, I look you in the eye. Nothing strange in my need for love, to give it, to be rocked in it. It is the only bet I can place, the one dark horse allowed me. And in your hesitancy, nothing strange either. Fear, you and I know, is the beginning of the imagination. The hellfire our mothers told us about in whispers, and the tightened fists I see, the specters walking through the bedroom who disturb my sleep. Fear is what makes the streets empty. It taught us the truth in other people's smiles. Still, it doesn't tell us where to live or how. We must find another way to talk, because sometimes we do, slipping terrors through our bodies like kerchiefs from a magician's sleeve, one after the other, until we're emptied beyond grief, solitary as in Eden, empowered as if the world was raised only for us. And I'll end with this one. It's called Heart Song. Heart Song. A bird sings from the tree. The birds sing, sending waves of desire, and I stand on my roof waiting for a randomness to storm my days. I stand on my roof filled with the longing that sings its way out of the bird, and I'm afraid that my call will break me, that the cry blocked by my tongue will pronounce me mad. Oh, bird, mad with longing. Oh, balancing bar, tightrope monkey grunting from a roof, fortunate bird. I stand on my roof and wave centuries of desire. I am the Bedouin pondering the abandoned campsite, licking the ashes of the night fire. The American walking, walking miles of dresses, blouses, and skirts, filling them with infinite lovers, the mystic feeling, the pool swirl in his chest, a desert of purpose, expanding and burning and yellowing every shade or green. And I stand on my roof and I say, come, like a stranger, like a father, like a feather falling on an old woman's shoulder, like a hawk that comes to feed from her hands. Come, love, like a mystery, like sunlight, rain, a blessing, a bus falling off a bridge. Come, love, like a deserting soldier, a murderer chased by law. Come, love, like a girl prostitute escaping her pimp. Come, love, like a lost horse, like a dog dying of thirst. Come, love, come ragged and melancholy like the last day of earth. Come, love, like a sigh from a sick man. Come, like a whisper, like a bump on the road, like a flood, a dam breaking turbine falling from the sky. Come, love, like the stench of a swamp, a barrage of light filling a blind girl's eye. Come, love, like a memory convulsing the body into sobs, like a carcass floating on a stream. Come, love, like a vision. Come, love, like a crushing need. Come, like an afterthought. Heart song, heart song. The pole smashes and the live wires, yellow streaks on the lush grass. Come, look, and let me wonder, someone so many, the sounds of footsteps, horses, and cars. Come, look, and let me wonder. I stand on my roof, echoing the bird's song. Do not sleep, do not sleep, now that you have housed your longing within the pain of words. Thank you so much. Thank you, St. Louis. Thank you.